You talked about demos earlier. Do you also have demos or anything that you send out for the choir that they can listen to in advance? Like, hey, we're gonna begin learning this song, or is that somewhat detrimental because you guys make a lot of tweaks and changes to the arrangement?
It's a great question. I would say, in short, I don't make as many changes as maybe some directors like to do. I like to follow the original intent of the author.
Sure.
And so where we have demos available, when we buy the music, if it's available, of how that choir song should go, I give that out to my choir as well as the orchestra in their preparation. So every song that's in the choir folder right now that we're working on, they have demo recordings in their own Dropbox folder to listen to outside of rehearsal. Again, I'd like them to listen a little more than maybe sometimes they do, but it's a way that they can worship throughout the week. But also, the more they keep that song and that arrangement of that song in their ear, the better prepared they are when they come to my rehearsal to know. It's a guessing game because, again, we're doing an arrangement of It Is Well With My Soul. It's a very different arrangement by Bradley Knight than the way we sing it on Sunday. If you don't have Bradley Knight's arrangement in your ear when you show up at my rehearsal, you will start singing from what you remember the song we sing on Sunday morning from the hymnal, and it doesn't follow the same way. And you start making mistake after mistake. And so it is helpful to have the way this song and this arrangement goes, a recording in their ear to be better prepared. And then our rehearsal is less distracted because everybody's coming in with the right mindset.
Where here at Countryside, where do you have your choir rehearsals? Obviously, it's here on campus.
Yeah.
But do you guys use the rehearsal room? Are you out in the worship center? And then after you speak to that, I would like to hear just about making the best of maybe the situation that you have at your church and those things. So tell me about Countryside and kind of the setup.
Yeah, and I'd love to get to a little bit of rehearsals that are different than just choir as well, what orchestra rehearsal and what band rehearsal looks like. But finishing on the theme of choir, when we built our new worship center in 2017, we were grateful to be able to have space to add a choir rehearsal room that's separate from the worship center. That was important to have a sort of staging area, a place for the choir to gather on Sundays. It's where the robes are hung because we use robes for our choir, where they get their music. And for a choir of 100 people, it's a decent-sized space. And so we have a choir rehearsal room here now. Prior to 2017, all we had was the original worship center, which is now called the chapel. The only place to rehearse was in that room. And so, which in some ways is nice because you're used to the space that you will always sing in. You rehearse in that same space. Some of the challenges we have found out here in our new worship center is when we rehearse in the choir room, the acoustics are a little different than what it's like in the worship center proper. And so we do mix up some rehearsals where we do go in there both for the benefit of practice and singing in the worship center loft, as well as it gives our tech crew some time to dial in the choir mics. Every now and then they need to make changes and they want us to practice so they can work on the sound in the room to help it sound better on Sundays. But for the most part, our choir rehearsal room is the place that we gather. And it's just a less formal space too, which is kind of nice. On Thursday nights, you come in. The formalness of our worship center, it sets a mood that I don't love as a consistent base. It fits what we do on Sundays very well, but when you come in a little more casual atmosphere for a rehearsal setting, we put out snacks and drinks for people to visit and fellowship. There's just something different in that space that's nice. So I'm happy that we have our own rehearsal room for choir. So moving on from choir, though, I wanted to touch on orchestra and band rehearsal too. So I am grateful at this church regarding orchestra that because I give the music out weeks in advance, we don't require an outside orchestra rehearsal other than when we get here Sunday morning an hour early. That is when we put it all together. For the Sunday to Sunday music, that's how that functions. Now, for special Christmas concert event, for Good Friday services, we do have a special dress rehearsal for those events. It's a lot bigger. The more music's a bit more challenging. So for those, we do a special rehearsal. But for the Sunday to Sunday music, we're able to get by with a 45-minute sound check / rehearsal on Sunday mornings prior to the services. And that's sufficient. Again, giving the music ahead of time And I alluded to repetition being important. We do a lot of the same music here. There are probably 100 songs that we've gathered in my 25 years here that are the standard traditional hymns that we believe are the hymns of this church. The contemporary songs that we've gathered over the last 20, 25 years that have become sort of the favorites. And so when you do those songs 3 to 5 times a year, year after year, it requires less preparation. So we are not opposed to new songs. We love teaching new songs. I think it's better, less is more on the teaching of new songs and introducing too many all at once in a given year. For the most part, we're less than 10 songs, and I'd say probably between 5 and 7 new songs we will introduce in a given year. And sometimes that's traditional hymns that we had just stopped singing for whatever reason that we want to reintroduce. But oftentimes it's new music that are coming out by trusted ministries from the Gettys, from City of Light, from Sovereign Grace Music that we love those ministries and benefited so much from. And so typically that's the world that we're getting the new music. So all that to say is the orchestra is able to rehearse on Sunday morning more of as a sound check and putting together songs we have done typically before. And so they're not learning it for the first time. And then lastly, I would just say for our band, we choose not to have an outside rehearsal during the midweek. We're able to rehearse as a band on Sunday nights from 4:30 to 5:30-ish, about an hour rehearsal, put those 5 songs together. Again, when we're doing repetition of songs, it comes together easier. Yeah. Again, I've sent out demos of how we do our songs. I've given the sheet music ahead of time. There's no surprises. But the other thing I would add to that is I always come in with a plan of how I want each song to start, who's going to start it, what instrument, which vocalist I want to lead out more, where who's taking what harmonies. I come in with a plan, not that that's the only way we're going to do it, but I like to not come in and wonder, how should we do it this time? Should we do it different? We've done it three different ways.
The efficiency.
You want to use your time efficiently, and so at least start with, hey, let's try it. Let's run through it this way, the way we did it last time. And then, you know, if we have time afterwards, if we want to go back and say, hey, why don't we change it up this way? Anybody have other ideas? And so we open it up to the band for other ideas. But as a director, as the leader, I always come in with at least a plan rather than the random wondering what we should do. Nobody has a good idea. I hadn't thought about it. Oh, I guess I should think about how we should start this song. And then you try it and like, oh, that didn't go as well. There are certain songs that it helps to start a certain way so that everybody knows how to get it together. But all that to say is we don't have midweek rehearsals for my band or orchestra. Only the choir rehearsal meets midweek.
Sure. And I think, too, maybe just a couple practical things to consider. I mean, the musicians that we have are fantastic, absolutely fantastic. Yes. And maybe even practically, if you were to add the orchestra into a rehearsal with the choir on Thursday night, that's obviously another element or another layer to it. But would it be challenging to be able to have both groups and to be able to rehearse in an hour and a half? I'm just thinking practically, maybe hypothetically here, if you were to add them in on Thursday night, and I'm not saying you should, what does that add to now that Thursday night? Obviously more people are going to have to be there, which is anywhere from 2 to 3 dozen that are in the orchestra, but
sure,
there's some other layers because you probably can't all fit in the rehearsal room.
Right. We'd have to consider where that rehearsal takes place to allow room for everybody. I want to answer that with a couple different things that came to my mind. There was, we are blessed to have some gifted musicians that don't require some of the rehearsal that maybe the church of somebody that's listening in, they do need that midweek rehearsal to really put it together. Because there are a lot of churches that still have a midweek orchestra rehearsal. But what that typically looks like is at a different time. And here's why. The focus of what an orchestra needs in rehearsal and fixing their parts is a very different rehearsal than what the choir is needing and how they're preparing. And so if it's strictly a sort of sound check rehearsal of only what's coming that upcoming Sunday, then that might make sense to include both into that. But if it's working on separate music uniquely, like my choir, when I'm rehearsing 5 songs for an upcoming 5 weeks, I'm not just focused on this Sunday. you're going to have a lot of people sitting around while I'm trying to fix the alto part or the soprano part that's not necessary to have an orchestra there. And so what helps usually with a church that needs midweek rehearsal for orchestra is it may be the same night, but from 6 to 7, 5:30, depending on how long you need to meet, do that right beforehand and then move to the choir rehearsal next. And so that would be a benefit. And again, I have my orchestra and choir come together on those special event rehearsals, the dress rehearsal for Good Friday and Christmas. But again, at that time, we're putting together the package at that point. It's not starting from scratch and wondering, how's this song going to go? Again, all those packets have been given out weeks in advance to players that know how to prepare and are expected to prepare ahead of time so that they know their music. The choir is being prepared so that it really is more of a dress rehearsal sound check and what challenges are making it not seamlessly come together rather than teaching the violin how to play their part for a given song. That we're not breaking it down at that level at those special rehearsals. Whereas a church that needs a midweek rehearsal week to week is going to focus in on more helping some of their players know how to play certain parts because maybe they're not as gifted and they need a leader to help guide them on that stuff. So, and that can happen in a lot of churches. And so, again, I'm grateful we're not there right now, but there have been players over the years that I've had to work more individually. They would come up during the week and we could work on their part because they needed a little more help to be prepared on Sunday and they didn't know how to prepare that way on their own.
Right.
And so I've worked with that and worked with groups and to help, midweek to be better prepared on a Sunday. And it's what caliber of players you have. And so whatever your church situation is, the praise band may need that type of thing as well, that Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon sound check rehearsal is not enough for the type of players you have. Well, then come up on a Saturday, come up midweek for an extra hour or two, especially when you want to teach some new songs. Sometimes over the years when I have several new songs that I know I want to teach in a year, I will have one special rehearsal devoted to learning those new songs as a sort of fellowship hangout time. And so we'll come up on a Saturday for a few hours, but it's focused on learning new songs that you don't want to be stressed about in the moment on that Sunday right before the service starts. And so, be creative on that kind of stuff of what your group needs.
Yeah, so as we keep talking about this rehearsal world, what are some things that you're looking for? Let's say you don't have a rehearsal room and the worship center is off limits and you're having to find somewhere on church campus. And we know a variety of churches are potentially listening to the podcast and they have different campuses and buildings. I mean, what are some key things that you're looking for an ideal rehearsal space? Is it just to sort of take what you can get, which it might be the case? What are some of those things you might be looking for?
See, and I think that comes down to the purpose of each rehearsal.
Okay.
When you're just wanting to get together and jam and make music together as a group, which a lot of bands do, it doesn't matter where you're doing that, especially as you're learning new music or making your own arrangement of a song. Any context can do that. But when you're talking about a rehearsal that is with a sound check focus to avoid distractions and issues and the microphone doesn't work or the guitar plug stopped working and so you got a dead guitar or whatever, those type of rehearsals you need to have in the space that the service is going to happen. And so that's why, regardless of what happens midweek, you need some time given on a Sunday in the space that the service is going to happen to get all of those things worked out so that everything is working properly. All the band, if they're using inner monitors, everybody's hearing what they need to hear. The sound guy has all the channels working and is wondering, why can't I hear the drums? Oh, we forgot to check it and make sure that thing was plugged in, those mics on that. Those are a crucial rehearsal sound check that I would never want to sacrifice. And even in like our church plant is meeting in a high school auditorium and has a church in a box. Just a few months ago, we launched a church plant in Parker County. And they need enough time on that morning to unpack a truck, set up all that stuff, and then rehearse in that space so that everything works when the service starts. And so they could get together on Saturday and practice the music and then not rely on time for that on a Sunday. But guess what? It doesn't work that way. They need enough time. And so the unloading process has to start earlier than you would think, so that there's plenty of time to get all of that stuff out. And again, I know there are a lot of churches that live this way. They have to set up in a space and then tear it all down week after week because it's a multi-purpose use room, and they can't just leave their things set up. Don't sacrifice the time needed to fully set up, fully check all the line checks, the mic checks, making sure the sound is working just like it worked last week or should have worked last week, and then time to rehearse with all of that working properly. Too many examples of trying to streamline that, rush it. We don't need that much time. We've done these songs before. Oh, the sound guys, they know how to set all this stuff up now. As soon as you give into those temptations, that's when mistakes start happening, stuff starts getting missed, and then the quality controls that we're talking about with this podcast start to rise to the top, and you're wondering, why do we keep chasing this issue week after week? Why can't they get that microphone to work? Why can we never hear the piano? Example after example, because they start cutting these corners, because they don't want to take the time. They don't feel it's necessary. Somebody doesn't, or somebody's always showing up late, and so they're trying to, you know, maybe if we start later, maybe that person will be on time. Whatever the excuse, you don't want to go down that path. And if you are there, I'd encourage you to rethink how much time you're giving to allow for these things to be worked out, so that there's plenty of time, so that the service has less distractions for the band as well as for the congregation. So
anyway, yeah, just a little. You know, part of the rehearsal world, Seth, and I want to mention this here, is, you know, you've got your focus and your priorities set in terms of what you're preparing for on the Lord's Day, but there's also other aspects of your ministry and the ministry here at church in terms of weddings and funerals and those things, where you are also preparing and you're doing sound checks. And even if it's just you and a piano player, you're making known that, look, we still need to sound check these things. We still need to run through these things if there's time, and normally there is. But I think that philosophy really resonates across the board, and I'm sure it's very helpful. And have you learned the hard way from some of those things?
I think you're sensing that again, when you're in a place for almost 25 right. years in doing this that long, you gather data. You just realize what works, what doesn't work, what has been helpful. And one of those things, no matter, as you mentioned, the smallest event of a funeral that just needs one microphone and a piano player, a wedding that's very simple or could be complex, no matter what the event is, having a plan mm-hmm. that gives you more time than less time to test everything, make sure it's all working, so that those things aren't distraction to those. And again, those are special events, those funerals and weddings that you don't want. You got one shot at this, and right. you want to make sure you've given the proper time. And I would also say with those, a lot of times you need to get, unfortunately, way ahead of that, because there's other rehearsal things going on for the funerals and weddings aside from the music part of it. And so we typically are an hour, if not an hour and a half, early for a special event like that, so we can get our part in, get it done, and then get out of the way before other things. The funeral director needs to come in and do some setting up, decorating, whatever. We want to be able to get our part done in an undistracted way, so that other people can then use that same space, whatever they need to do for finishing touches for weddings and funerals. And so all of those, you want to think about those kind of things. When can we do this at an undistracted time, not rushed? When can my sound guys be undistracted?
Yeah, that's great.
To focus on that. Yep. So again, this is not about just musicians being there to rehearse their part. The tech people that are responsible to make it all work, they have learned they need that extra time, and they benefit from it. And so we're all getting there early enough to make sure everybody has everything they need. They've been able to hear it. I'm not doing a sound check without the sound guy there. He's there. If we're using slides, we're not doing these checks without the slide guy there running through the slides. So they've been able to practice and know how everything works, making sure it's working for them. Again, as soon as you try to cut a corner there and leave one of those people out, well, you know, goodness, it's just one song. They don't need to run through it. It's pretty straightforward. I'm telling you, I've got example after example of just when you think you can start the service and it's going to work, something went wrong because they didn't check that or didn't have that slide person. He accidentally hit a wrong button at the last minute. So there's enough examples. I strongly advise, including everybody that's going to be a part of the service, is a part of these sound check rehearsals so that everybody knows what's going on, is practicing what they're to do. And then the last thing I would say on that is we always have a standard protocol here that 5 minutes before the service start time is when everybody needs to be in place, ready to go. If you need a bathroom break, need to go get a drink of water, get a snack beforehand, get it done so that you're back in your seat 5 minutes before and just getting refocused right on what the job is so that when the service is about to start, you're not coming swinging in and distracted because you were out, you know, whatever you were doing. 5 minutes is a nice time to get regrouped and start looking through, reminding yourself what the rehearsal things, the pointers, so you can be preparing to do your job well and not distracted because you got there 30 seconds before it started. Sure. And you're sweating bullets because it just, you need that time. So 5 minutes is a thing we do here as well before the service starts.
Yeah, and you're stepping in to participate in corporate worship, so it's not, it is playing your musical instrument, but it's doing that unto the Lord, mm-hmm. you know, with the Lord's people, right?
Yeah.
Well, Seth, there's one more component to the sort of rehearsal and planning aspect of the music ministry that I'd like for you to touch on, and we're going to ultimately do a full-length episode or two on this, but I'd like for you to speak at a 30,000-foot level on your rehearsal and planning for the Lord's Day with Pastor Tom and how you guys meet on a weekly basis and how you guys walk through an order of service and how all of that works. So we'll talk about that in greater detail later. We'll get you and Pastor Tom on together. But touch on that for me just for a couple
yeah,
minutes.
Yeah, because that is an important aspect of the planning that that I think all music pastors should have, that relationship with their senior pastor to be communicating what's going on and agreeing in agreement as they approach each service. And so in a church like ours with Pastor Tom many, many years ago, we discussed having a weekly meeting to just touch base, whether we needed it or not, to talk about the upcoming services plus other things that maybe we just needed to discuss that it's hard to catch each other in the hallway. And so we scheduled a weekly meeting that would just give us that block of time to do these things. And so part of that is discussing the upcoming services that I plan musically, and I plan knowing that my pastor is an expositor and he's going through books of the Bible, and I already know generally where he's going, but it's nice to meet with him also and get an idea of what the upcoming weeks are, how many verses each week he thinks he's going to get, what sort of themes he's hitting on. Because if I can, I want to hit some of those musical themes with what we're preparing congregationally, as well as what the choir specials could be. It's nice to hit those themes, but it doesn't have to be. I would say that, because we're a church that likes to respond after the message with a closing song, that weekly meeting is helpful because at that point I do know generally where he's going in that upcoming service, the sermon, and how he's planning to land the plane and what sort of themes he's going to review at the end. And that gives me good good concepts, good themes, good ideas to know how to pick a closing song. Sometimes in that meeting we'll pick what that closing song could be, or it gives me some ideas to go back to my office and consider. But that's a nice, even if the front of the service, some of the songs don't necessarily hit a home run on the theme that he's going to preach for the day, to wrap up the morning and respond based upon the truth that we just heard and were taught, yeah, I find is very helpful. And so we enjoy that. But early on in the ministry here, Tom and I discussed, he trusted me to plan quality music week after week that hit some of the general themes of the church. God as the creator, the sovereign one, Christ as our Savior and Lord, God's leading, Christ leading in our life, the sanctification process, the hope of heaven. And the hymnal and the songs of the church are full of a variety of themes that are important to hit throughout the church calendar year. And so I just purposefully try to hit some of those themes with a selection of music. Rather than hit all of those themes in one service, I try to pick one of those themes as the general theme of the morning. And so we'll have a scripture slide as people walk into the service that sort of sets that tone. Our pastor that does announcements and starts the service makes reference to what that musical theme of the morning will be. And then we will sing congregational songs on that theme. The special music will be about that theme. And again, in the Lord's providence, sometimes that naturally flows into what the pastor will be teaching on the Sunday. Those discussions have been approved through my relationship with the pastor. Again, there's a trust level that we like that variety that we hit throughout the year. And he trusts me to periodically come back to a lot of those themes that the church should be singing about. And then as I'm able to, I find new songs that are newer expressions of those same themes, as well as hanging on to the traditional hymns of the church. So that's some freedom I've been given. I assume a lot of churches, the pastor and the music guy, have that similar relationship that the pastor entrusts that responsibility to his music pastor to hit various themes. But I know some churches are more strategic on how they want to do that. In each week, they want to be very planned and songs that very much hit what the pastor's theme is. And so there's benefit to do that as well. We just, with the style of ministry that we have here, and with expository preaching, sometimes you can have 4 to 6 weeks in a row that are basically the same theme as the pastor is unpacking a larger section of Scripture. This was very true in Romans, some of those sections. It was an 8 or 10 or 12 week series. And, you know, it's, you know, how many weeks in a row are we going to hit that same theme? And so there's freedom for me to branch out beyond that theme, but still the closing song could hit it in a responsive way, so that we're not singing the same songs for 8 or 10 weeks in a row. Not that that would be wrong, but again, in our context, it gives me a wider range from week to week to pick songs.
Yeah, that's great. So there are some services where there's a thread woven through each element of the regular principle of worship, or there's some times where you guys are connecting on a certain theme that might be preached on, or if it's a communion Sunday, you know, we also have music surrounding the communion aspect of the service that's geared more towards those things as well.
Yeah.
But generally, the morning service, there is a cadence to it,
yeah.
Right? It's you're never just throwing anybody for a loop, or no one's coming in on a Sunday morning. What just happened, right? There's a general flow and cadence that we've got, and that you and Tom have done a wonderful job of just setting through the years.
Yeah, and that's been a conversation we've had over the years of, you know, is staying with a certain form, does it lose a focus for people when things are too predictable? Mm-hmm. And so we have tried a variety of different things over the years, but where we landed eventually was we like that for our church. We aren't concerned by the predictable nature of it. We find it actually more helpful at the church that they know that, you know, when the organ and the piano are playing that final prelude, mm-hmm. that's sort of calling the people, get in here, the door's about to close, service is about to start. We choose to get the announcements right out of the way at the beginning, so that once the musical worship starts, we are in sort of those biblical elements of worship, of the music, of the public reading of Scripture, of the pastoral prayer, of the teaching of the Scripture, and then also the elements of communion and baptism that are included periodically throughout the year. We like to get some of those other elements out, and then it's predictable, and we will start with announcements. Then we'll start with a set of congregational music. We'll do a special music. Again, not every church does that or needs to do that. We're a church that finds that helpful, and it encourages the choir and orchestra in a different way of participation than not having special music. And so I found that that's a way to keep a confident, strong choir in your church, is when you use special music. Some churches started losing their choir and even orchestra when they stopped using special music as a part and element in the service, because then the choir became pretty much all backdrop and background and never call it a performing group, and I think you understand what I'm saying. It's not to take away glory from God, but those skilled singers and skilled musicians playing a song in a special way that the congregation then watches more as an audience, but still participating and being encouraged to worship along as the skilled musicians do a song by themselves.
Right.
And so I think there's strong benefit in that, and it's encouraged great participation of people that want to be in the choir because we do those type of things and not just sing congregational songs just like the congregation does, and same with the orchestra. By highlighting special music, I think it's a helpful way for a church to grow those ministries if they don't have it or are wondering why we can't get more people in the choir. It could be as simple as because you're not doing special music or things that value them in a unique way as the skilled musicians. So
right, and there's still unity across all the Lord's people, even during the special music from the choir, or if it's a soloist, or even just someone from the orchestra. Because the majority of the time, if not all the time, the special music, the lyrics are in our church bulletin, are provided in some way where not only can we watch and listen, but we've got the lyrics that we can also... you would probably prefer us just sing in our hearts and not, but yes. it's there. So it's not, although in one sense it's an isolated act of worship by a particular group, the choir per se, but there's still a unity in that we're all gathered together there with the words or the lyrics in front of us, able to participate in that as well.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is we want to be intentional that this is not a moment to check out. You become an audience while the musicians on stage do their thing.
Right.
These are carefully chosen songs to fit a theme mm-hmm. of the morning, to reiterate, to let you now sit and dwell on words about that theme in a different way than as you're participating. Sometimes as you're singing, you're not always thinking about what you're singing. Again, we all could work on that. But we intentionally give those lyrics to the people. I point that out. Now the choir is going to sing. The words are in your bulletin. Follow along. Mm-hmm. Because, again, ultimately the words are the most important of the message that we're trying to communicate. But how the music is presented supports those lyrics and helps them stick in a way uniquely. And so that's the difference of music with text versus just the preaching of the word, honestly. Is when you set lyrics, biblical truth, to music, there's something about how God has wired us that it sticks in our memories, and it's more recitable just because of the element of music. And so I strive to find quality, beautiful music that carries these words in a way that our people, it comes back to their mind and their heart throughout the week, and they don't even need to start up the recording of a song. It was received in a way that their memory banks captured it, and so it's attributing to God's creativity in designing our bodies in a way, in our minds, in our hearts, to grasp truth that way through the mechanism of music and its artistry. And so it's been fascinating to see how that works and watch that, and to be a part of that as I plan and pick music that I know is going to stick with our people throughout the weeks and months and years.
Yeah, that's great. So, Seth, let's transition from talking about the rehearsal process to maybe we can call it the review process. So, again, you've got a lot going on here throughout the week, and of course on Sundays, a lot of people involved, a lot of aspects of the ministry. Speak to me about the review process and what it looks like for you to take a step back and survey everything that's going on and everybody involved, and maybe how you can learn and grow and shift and change and tweak things and, you know, make the ministry better, if you will, or if you can do things that would be helpful for the people that serve alongside you. So talk to me about that.
Yeah, so I think one very important aspect of quality controls when it comes to music ministry, or really anything you do, is the willingness to review how things went yourself, as well as to hear from others what went well, what didn't go well, what are ways to make improvements. And so you need a mechanism in place that provides that. And I believe in a weekly review process that the key people are watching, listening, discussing how the services went on a Sunday, so that we can make adjustments as needed to make sure we're hitting the mark that we want to hit. And when you don't include a review process or include the right people that need to be part of that, it's sort of, nobody said anything, so I guess it went well, which is not always the case. And so encouraging a teachableness, a willingness to learn and grow, a willingness to analyze things, and this goes for what happened in the room itself, and a way to capture that as best you can, maybe through a secondary recorder, a camera that can capture that, maybe different than what the stream mix is capturing. Mm-hmm. Because again, it's different what happens in the room itself and the space than what is broadcast through the live stream cameras and the audio mix that typically happens there. It's a different one. And so while that's a beneficial review process to go back and just watch what was broadcast, that helps you fix the broadcast side of things. But maybe there are elements happening in the room that the broadcast element doesn't really highlight. Mm-hmm. And so you need a way to capture what's going on in the room as well. And so whether that's some key people that are in your choir that happen to be sick or they lost their voice and are sitting out, several sound guys. We have more sound guys than we use every Sunday. And so there's been a time in our process that we ask them, while you're sitting in the room, you know, make some notes of what you're hearing, what you're not hearing, and so that we can follow up with that. And maybe a speaker has gone bad in a certain section. Maybe there's some dead spots that we need to address acoustically in here. And so it's always helpful to also review what's going on in the space with the right people that are listening with an analytical mind. Again, this isn't just for everybody. There are people that don't know how to listen critically and be like, no, everything sounded great to me. Well, you're not the right person that I'm looking for. Somebody willing to criticize for positive improvements is what we're talking about here. And so we have to be willing to do that ourselves, as well as find people around us that are willing to do that as well and speak into us. And I thought that could have gone better if you would have done this differently. We look at the lighting and stuff in our review process. Is the lighting right? Is it telling the story right? Are the cameras a match? When you start using multiple cameras, you have to be careful that the coloring of each camera matches from camera to camera, or it's very obvious, like, whoa, they just switched to a different camera that is, they're very dark all of a sudden versus bright. And so there are those things that in the moment, it may not get captured, because in the live broadcasting of things, you're flying by the seat of your pants, and it is what it is. But if you watch back and watch it from a critical standpoint, does this look how we want it to look? Is there anything we would change? Well, yes. Well, the change has to happen during the week before the next service, or else you get back to the next service, you'd be like, oh yeah, we forgot. We wanted to do that. And so I find a weekly rehearsal review process of a couple hours that the individuals are watching and looking, as well as a meeting to discuss those things, is a helpful way to not start slipping on our quality controls. So review things, very important as a part of having a quality service.
Sure. So what does that, Seth, what does that look like during the week? So we've got everything on Sunday. Everybody's in the office from Tuesday to Friday. So what does, you know, how long are these meetings? Are they weekly? Or just sort of run me through the practical aspect of your schedule as it relates to this review process.
Yeah. So in the early on days, when I instituted this as a part of way to clean up things and try to get everybody consistently doing what we're trying to do, I required the meeting to be, my AV people were there with at the meeting, and it was between an hour and 2 hours in the early phase, just to kind of get a system in place where we would watch back and listen back to a live service that was recorded, and I would little by little start pointing out the things that I'm seeing and hearing and modeling what I wanted them to do as individuals. And once I set up a process of what that looked like, and they saw, oh, he's serious about making notes, very detailed notes about what went well and what didn't go well, Then it became an individual thing that on their own now, they are expected to do that and make notes that they then bring to a meeting and we discuss so that they know what I'm expecting. Now they're bringing that expectation. And then the third level of that now is they send out those review notes as these. I have a video director and an audio director. They're analyzing how their volunteers are doing, and they're giving those notes now to their volunteers so that it's not just us only sort of discussing these things in-house. But the volunteers that are working this stuff, they want to know, am I doing a good job? What's something I could have done better? And so we've now established that there's that level of communication that the notes from my directors that have reviewed encourage them with, hey, great Sunday, guys. Thought this went well, thought that went well. What I thought we could have done a little better here, if you go back and watch, and they send them links to those recordings so that we're all looking at the same thing and watching the same thing. From this video that I watched back, I thought it at the 5-minute mark, you know, we missed a moment there. We should have switched to this camera or the audio for some, the pastor's mic didn't come on in time. So let's remember, you know, we want to be thinking ahead on what's coming next so we don't forget to unmute things. Just making sure that there's an accountability so that the quality is valued across all of the volunteers as well, not just at my level, not just at the pastor level, not just at the directors, but we want everybody committed to this pursuit of excellence. And you don't get there if you never review and ask yourself, how are we doing? You have to be willing to. But what I've, lastly, I will add, what I've learned is you need to make sure you're balanced with the positive reinforcement of, we've got a great thing going here. We're doing some things very well. So when we're going to talk about these critical things and negative things of stuff to fix, let's keep that part of the bigger picture that we are doing things very well. We've got some very faithful volunteers that know what they're doing. And so we're just catching some little things that we want to streamline and minimize the little things from getting in the way. And so don't lose sight of the big picture in this. You want to err on the side of positive encouragement and reinforcement, because what I learned the hard way was I assumed that on my leaders and my volunteers that they already knew we were doing great. Mm-hmm. I would just get right down to the negative things too consistently and, okay, let's get in. Okay, this was bad, this was bad, this was bad. And it began to discourage them as volunteers that, man, are we ever doing a good thing here? And I lost sight of that in the communication, that even though I know it and I assume they know it, you've got to build these people up and make sure you're starting from, we've got a good thing going here. We are doing good, and give them some examples of the positive. We aren't hearing any complaints from things. These are little things that we know we can do better, but as far as other people, we're doing a great thing, and we get so much in sharing with them, emails we get from people around the world that have watched the live stream, somebody in the room. I try to make it a habit. Anytime I get an encouragement, a note, an email, or a word that somebody says on a Sunday, hey, things sounded really good, I try to make sure that my sound guys get that. I pass that on. Hey, I wanted you to know somebody came to me and said it sounded really good today, or that looked really good on the stream. And so that they know they're getting, it's not just me. This is, the team needs to hear that and be encouraged by that. And so when we do this review, make sure there's a positive element in the midst of trying to fix things. So,
yeah, you went where I was going to go next with this, you know, and maybe you could speak a little more on it, but just, yeah, what is the balance of, you know, we have so many volunteers and so many people using their giftings and serving in a variety of ministries here, but also at the same point, there are some things that maybe that you could tweak or change or suggest to help maybe make things better. So you've already talked about it a little bit, but maybe if you could just go back to just talking about that right balance and why it is key to realize that things are going well, but at the same point, you want to motivate others to continue to grow in their giftings and those things.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, there's a relational aspect to this that, that can't go unnoticed, that the volunteers especially need to know that you care about them in all of these ministries, but specifically we're talking about the tech ministry thing. I try to make a point to to hang out before and afterwards on setup and tear down things, checking in with the volunteers. Hey, what's going on? How was your week? How's your family? Mm-hmm. It can't always be just about the work either. That they need to know you care about them before, you know, it's just about fix this. You shouldn't have done that. You know, how can we fix, you know, those things? Mm-hmm. And so I want to emphasize the importance of relationship as a part of this too, with our people on the Sundays when we gather, coming off the stage, walking back to the sound booth, you know, saying hi to the volunteers, because there's less interaction now. The church gets bigger, there's more distance. You know, we got the stage people with the singers and the orchestra and myself. You got the AV crew. Some of them are behind the stage in an underground tunnel, you know, that they're working that I don't get to interact with. So to go out of my way to try to just talk to them, we purposefully plan special sort of fellowship events outside of even the Sunday services to provide relational times with these people to know we love one another and we're all in this together. There's got to be a unifying element. And I tell you what I've learned is that bridges the gap. When they know you care about them at a relational level, it sure does make that email or that conversation about, you know, we've been struggling on the slides advancing in time so that people know what to sing on the next verse, or, you know, making sure that those mics are unmuted or at the right time, or the balance is right. When you have to point out some things that they're making mistakes on or aren't quite hearing right or seeing right, it really, I guess, eases that conversation when you've already established, hey, we're brothers and sisters in this ministry. We're all a team. We love each other, care about each other, and we're all striving for the same goals here. And so let's not lose sight of that when we have to talk about harder things. And these are principles that are more than just music ministry. These are life principles we're talking about, but they do apply in these contexts. Because if you're not, and if it's just always an analytical meeting, you begin to run volunteers off, mm-hmm. because they're like, dude, man, I feel like I'm getting beaten up every week, and that I'm not appreciated for being there and faithful, and I'm just a volunteer. And so, again, these are things that I've learned for good and bad over the years, that I've tried to strive for a better balance of that and not assume that everybody knows I care about them, assume that everybody knows I value their faithfulness as volunteers, that I value their contribution and quality. But I need to say it more rather than assume it. And that helps the harder conversations of when we need to fix something and clean up something. It sure does help a lot. And again, I learned the hard way by too much focus on the negative. And just, this is more a personality thing for me, that I, for better or worse, the Lord has just given me a set of ears and a set of eyes, and that I don't miss much. And I hate that about me, because the perfectionism in me sometimes causes me to struggle to enjoy things in the moment and be able to enjoy because I heard that wrong note, or I saw that mistake happen from the slides or the sound or the lights came up too late or whatever. And those little things, I don't miss, and therefore, if I'm not careful, they grind at me. And so these are things that I've had to learn to work through and balance to try to have the right perspective of the positive and the constructive criticism with that, because I'm given to see the negative in everything.
Sure, sure. Well, Seth, what are some of the things that you've done through the years to help pursue these relationships with all the people you serve with? Of course, there's the administrative side of things and the rehearsal side of things and the review side of things, but I mean, you've already alluded to it, but just sort of give me a bullet point or a practical run through of just what you have done in the past, not only for you individually to pursue relationships with everyone, but how do you sort of build places for fellowship and camaraderie and for your people in the ministry to get together beyond just a Sunday morning and those things?
Sure. Yeah, so there's a variety of things that I have tried to do over the years, from your basic individual follow-ups of, you know, scheduling meals, having a lunch with some of these volunteers in the ministry to get to know them. If I'm aware of a hospital situation going on, trying to make hospital visits to check in on people, some of my musicians or tech people also have an outside job that it's one of my artists is a saxophone player, and he shares, you know, and he also mixes sound for us. And so when he's got a gig coming up outside of the church, I try to go there and just support that and know that that I value you as what you do and your artistry, and value that you are willing to give up your time to serve in the church. And so there are individual things as I'm aware of that. And I think that just goes a long way to communicate you care about your people. If there's a death in the family that's from somebody that's not even a family member that doesn't go to the church, but it's one of your people, you try to go to those funerals and support your family through that. And so there's individual aspects to it. But also many years ago, we started these get-togethers, just fun, outside of the ministry kind of things, where we have it started with just kind of a summer barbecue pool party at somebody's backyard. And we invite everybody. It's choir, it's orchestra, it's band, it's children's choir directors, it's the AVL guys. We invite everybody and their families to come. And as the church grew, it's gotten pretty big and crowded for that. But that's just a casual thing on a Saturday to hang out. We play volleyball. We play cornhole. We sit and visit and have meals. And that shared experience, because when I think of the music ministry, I cannot think of it apart from the support ministries of the AVL guys and other things like that. They are part of what helps the music ministry function the way it does. And so I've always valued that as sort of a family. In the fall, when it's really hot outside, we come up to the church and do a cornhole tournament. We gather up a bunch of cornhole sets from people in the church and put on a big tournament down in the gym, and we feed them lunch. And so that's always become a great event. The end of the year, we kind of do a big Christmas banquet after our final Christmas concert in December. We invite all of our people, all of our music ministry, choir, orchestra, band, AVL people, and we have between 250, 300 people, counting their families, that come to that event on a Sunday night afterwards just to appreciate. We consider that our appreciation banquet. We feed them a nice meal. We have some little door prizes we give out. Mm-hmm. We recognize some of the volunteers that do extra things throughout, you know, week after week things. We try to recognize them there. And it's just, it's a real sort of a climax part of the year that we just see. It takes a village to do what we do. And we want to acknowledge that. And so while I'm thankful that this is a ministry that I get to lead and the Lord has blessed through being at this church, it's hundreds of people mm-hmm. that make this ministry function. And in smaller churches, that's still the case. Whatever the size of church and music ministry, don't discount the volunteers that are week in and week out making that thing happen, and find ways to appreciate them and value them, and get them together outside of things that are just the rehearsal sort of mindset or the review mindset. Just general fellowship hangout times go a long way to build the relationship that you need, just to have the unity you want, but also when harder things do come and you have to grind at something, to try to fix something, you got to have a relationship with people. It's crucial.
Oh, that's helpful, Seth. Brother, I just want to tell you, we are grateful for you and your longtime service and ministry here at Countryside. And as you just mentioned, the many people that the Lord has brought here to serve in a variety of ways in the music ministry. And we look forward, if the Lord wills, for the years to come. And I'm grateful that you came on the podcast today. And I look forward to the future and having you back on to discuss several more aspects of the music ministry, and then to have you and Pastor Tom on together to talk about corporate worship. And really the list of future episodes with you guys is endless. So I'm grateful for you.
I look forward to that, and thanks again for having me.